Hi everyone, welcome back to the Wild Adventures podcast. Fun fact, this is the third time that I've tried doing this introduction. So today we're going to be talking to Ben Wood, or rather I spoke to him a while ago, but you are hearing the interview with Ben Wood. He owns his own tennis business, and the conversation kind of resolves around how he set it up, his journey through it, what it's like to teach kids versus adults tennis. We go into some mental health things as well, what's just good to have a good mental health. It was a really, really interesting conversation. I really enjoyed our hour together, and I hope you enjoy the results of that. So here you go.
Ba, ba, ba.
Yay, I can hear you now. Hi.
Okay.
Yeah, how are you?
Yeah, very, very well.
This is exciting. I've only seen you on pictures.
Now here we are. Yeah, so Nick, you gave you my details, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. He pimped you out. I was calling a pimp today because he keeps finding me more people to talk to.
Very good, Nick. Well-connected man.
He is, isn't he? So Nick was telling me that one of the things that you do that's very exciting is that, exciting, that damn word, I'm going to bleep exciting out of every interview now, is that you've got a tennis business.
Yeah, so I've been running a tennis business for 6 years now. So I was a tennis coach for about 5-6 years before that, and then sort of got the opportunity to run a program myself. So obviously it gives you like full autonomy on everything you want to do, how you want to set it up, and it's obviously like it's a lot of things away from the court as well as on the court that you have to learn, and it's kind of like a learning as you go sort of experience, really.
So have you always been interested in tennis?
So sort of played sort of a lot, so I was about 14-15 and sort of a little bit less for a few years, but like it was kind of my holiday job. When I was at university, sort of come back, did tennis coaching like each holiday. And then I didn't plan on being a tennis coach. Essentially, when I came back after university, I just popped into my old club to say hello. And at their time, they had a meeting and offered to offer me a job for that year, and then just stayed in tennis coaching for forever.
Forever and ever. So it's kind of ended up being a dream job then, has it?
Well, it's not many people get to do something which they don't consider a job. So yeah, it's just doing playing something you enjoy, working with people, which is nice. So obviously like you're helping people improve. Some days might sort of drag a little bit, but on the whole, generally it's just really nice to be able to sort of give back, and you see people enjoy improving, and like sort of it's kind of nice to be able to facilitate that in your job that you do.
Yeah. So do you have a lot of clients that start from scratch? I suppose you've got people from all different kinds of
experiences. The club that I've worked in performance before, so sort of working with some like the best kids in the country, and sort of starting off sort of very young kids with lots of sort of potential. So I've sort of worked that side before, so I sort of understand how that works. So I sort of worked in sort of performance before, so sort of like working with some like very good young kids, and with the goal to be sort of as good as they can be, to get to sort of national, international sort of levels in sort of play. But the sort of club I'm at the moment, sort of probably, because you need a certain number of courts and sort of court space to sort of run a program, which is about like sort of performance, whereas we haven't got the same sort of court space. So it's more designed to sort of like a family club and create a right environment sort of play, and still sort of teach what I've sort of learned in the past. It's obviously like, we give sort of obviously high quality lessons, but like it's for people just playing once a week, maybe twice a week, to get better. And the goals are a little bit different. So my goals is for people, if they play all the way to 18, they can then join a club when they're older and they can be a competent club player. For our slightly better players, it's to try and get them into like the adult teams and sort of play sort of competitions in the adult teams. So it's kind of like our goals that we sort of have for our players.
That's really cool. And did you always see yourself as doing this for a living, or did you see yourself doing something else? What did you want to be when you were a kid?
As a kid, probably as a young kid, a professional tennis player, but I kind of realised by about 11 or 12 that I just wasn't good enough. I was good, but there was kind of like, there was like levels, and I kind of got kind of awareness of levels due to, so I was probably about top 30 in the country, something like that. And when I played like the sort of people like the top five in the country, like they would beat me handsomely. And then obviously Andy Murray being the same age as myself, I was aware that when he played them, he was beating them handsomely as well. So it was like, so, good, but there's different levels basically. So I kind of probably lost the team a little bit.
Saying you're in the top 30, you used to be in one of the top 30. That's pretty good.
not too bad. It was a while ago. I think the phrase sort of use it or lose it. Unfortunately, I don't really play so much now, so I probably lost a lot of it.
It's okay. You're teaching others now, so.
Yeah, I can teach better than I can play now. That's for sure.
Good skill to have then, as a teacher.
Yeah, in my role, I prefer to be good at teaching rather than I can play well, but can't make them improve. Certainly the right way around in my career now.
So what's your most favorite thing about being a tennis teacher? Tennis teacher.
Well, I like the autonomy that I have. So like the sort of choice in what I can do. So like when I've sort of got someone in front of me, it's always sort of up to me to sort of choose how I sort of develop and move. I like sort of always like problem solving. So when you've got sort of someone in front of you sort of trying to solve the puzzle almost of what it is, what technical fault that you're trying to achieve, you sort of work it out, and then how you sort of deliver that message. So like you can say one thing to one person, one and the same thing to someone else with the same problem, one will get it, one won't. So it's then learn how to adapt and then I suppose the psychology sort of side sort of comes in, sort of how to explain, sort of get them to understand the sort of skill that you're getting. And then like you sort of, then you've got like the side, especially with your sort of kids, you've got like the how to motivate. So like if you can get them wanting to get better, they will get better. So it's like how to engage them and sort of motivate them, whether through sort of praise in terms of what they're doing. Some kids will respond very good to praise, whether it's sort of making it a little bit competitive. So that is sort of engaging their sort of competitive side to get what you want. But I guess what I'm trying to do now is sort of using the sort of psychology or different sort of techniques, but do it in like a soft way. So like in the past in performance, you'd push hard because you had to sort of eke out the best from them. Where sort of now you try to sort of get them motivated in like a softer stance. So you're not like sort of shouting or like really sort of like on them. You're sort of more, you sort of try and find a way of like a phrase to sort of get them on board or sort of dangle a little sort of carrot a little bit here and there. I mean, sometimes like a stick works a little bit. You just need to give them a little bit of a kick up the arse to get going. But most of the time they're not too bad.
So you're getting some really good skills in how to manage people there then.
Yeah. So, I mean, I in sort of summer holidays, you can have up to like sort of 30 kids and you've got to be able to manage with your sort of self, maybe another coach or assistant sort of helping. But I find sometimes working with 30 kids and they can almost be moving along like the Pied Piper to your tune of exactly what you want. And then you have your own kids and you can't get the same thing with your own kids. So like, I've got all these skills but nothing works on my own, but it seems to work very well on others, I guess.
I suppose that's because the kids see you every day, so they know how to like twist you around their little fingers and how to manipulate you.
probably a little bit softer on them as well. Yeah.
So you had
two boys. Yes. Yeah, so right? four and six now.
Wow.
Yeah, love
you. How does that work?
So. I mean, obviously everything at the moment, we're not in schools at the moment. So I'll be looking after my kids sort of every Thursday, every other weekend. So it's nice to see them, try to get some schoolwork done as best you can and get them, them active. I guess it's every parent's sort of challenge right now to sort of get them doing what they're supposed to be doing.
Yeah. But, yeah. And have you found any of your skills with being a teacher or being a parent has like moved the other way? So what you learn from one, you can implement with the other and vice versa?
Possibly, don't think so. Not in terms of sort of parent to coach, I think sort of developed, obviously, like I've been working in it for sort of 30 to 11 years now. So like the first sort of 5 years of sort of building the sort of skill set up already. I suppose I've sort of, the challenge is sort of knowing the different things than how to sort of get it from your kids is a little bit harder. So it's like sometimes it's worse knowing more things, like sometimes ignorance is bliss. So when you know like different things about what they should be doing in terms of their development and things like that, and you're finding it hard to get them to do it, it's sort of it's a little bit sort of frustrating at times, but it's not.
So having kids and running your own business, that in itself is a pretty big life adventure or life adventures.
Very hard, yeah. It's sort of it's a whole sort of change in sort of dynamic, and sort of separated from the kids' mum about 2 years ago. But like sort of before, like with sort of kids and work, and especially when you're starting a business, it's very tricky because it's very, everything you're creating is new. So you're creating new processes, you're having new ideas, everything you have to sort of, everything you come up with, you've got to sort of create. Whereas the further along you sort of get, you have like the systems in place, which makes it more efficient. You can have like sort of marketing or advertising campaigns that you can just reuse from the year before. So you've already got the design. And you also know like the time frames of when things work, everything else. Whereas to start with, there's a lot more sort of trial and error involved as you're learning what works. Whereas if you've been doing it longer, you kind of know what works and when and how to do it and things like that. So it becomes a little bit easier. And you can then, when you have those things, you can look at adding other areas in as well, because you're not overabsorbed on those things.
So what would be your advice to someone wanting to start out on running their own business that is sports related?
Firstly is make sure that you love it. If you don't enjoy working with people, it's not the business for you. you've got to enjoy sort of doing that sort of aspects of things. But if you like working with sort of people, it's learning to how to interact with people. It's a very much a sort of person-to-person sort of business. So the best sort of marketing or advertising is always word of mouth, especially like if you're working, not most sort of sports, unless you're in sort of performance, your target market is usually within a 3 mile, 5 mile radius. It's not too big, usually speaking. So if you're doing a fantastic job, and you've got parents that are sort of championing you in the playground to others, then your reputation is going to sort of go from strength to strength with that. I've had sort of in the past sort of people say, especially when I sort of started at the club, sort of people say, I heard really good things from XYZ, and that other sort of people, like I came down because I heard this from someone else. So like obviously that different marketing and sort of social media and being sort of like sort of newspapers, other things are sort of great, but a word of mouth is always the best recommendation.
That must have been really exciting those first few times. I mean, it's probably exciting every time, but those first few times when you had people coming to you saying so and so told me about you and how good you are, that must have been quite invigorating.
Yeah, it's sort of almost sort of, it gives you sort of validation that what you're doing is right. So you sort of, it's obviously sort of nice that you kind of, what you're doing, you're on track and doing the right things with what you're doing. And it's sort of like, obviously sort of gives you that sort of motivation, sort of keep, you know, sort of keep pushing in the right direction. So I think when I started at the Ellerswick, which is the club I'm at, they had on average between 500 and 600 members at the tennis club. And it went up in 2 to 3 years to 800. Members.
Wow.
To a point that they had decided to have a waiting list at the club, which is generally pretty unheard of for most tennis clubs to have a waiting list. And
that's amazing.
Yeah, and at its peak, I think we had just under 300 on the waiting list as well.
So, wow.
It's sort of like, obviously, like what we were sort of doing, the sort of the coaches at the club and what the committee were doing and everything else was obviously sort of driving everything in the right direction, and the reputation people wanted to play at the club and sort of be part of the atmosphere and the environment that we sort of worked hard to sort of create, which is obviously
I think the key thing is sort of making it enjoyable and approachable. We do a lot of sort of like adult beginner classes and it's very much about creating the right environment that sort of people feel safe, secure, and they sort of enjoy the process, because especially when you start any sport, it's quite intimidating starting something new. So like learning how to sort of create that sort of safe, almost that safe place for them, that you can learn, you can make mistakes, you can have a laugh. Also as well, like you get to know the people in the group as well, and they become your friends. Some of the groups we even sort of do it now where sort of once, twice a year, like the group will go for we'll go to the pub in the evening, like sort of
nice
and sort of, and it's building that sort of social sort of element up. And often like the Christmas ones, I'll do sort of sweets for the kids, hot chocolates for the adult groups. I think the favorite one, the adult one we do, is like we do a PIMS one in the summer.
Excellent, that one sounds like the best.
That one, yeah, everyone seems to enjoy that one.
PIMS, that's such an English thing as well, PIMS in the summer.
I mean, yeah, I enjoy that one as well. So it's always sort of, it's just sort of giving back, and it's sort of giving, creating that and sort of in that environment that you sort of want to sort of create, and everyone really sort of enjoys it. And especially if you've made friends with the group that you're in, it kind of you feel more part of something. And obviously like they enjoy their tennis and the improvement that they're getting, and they just, you know, creating sort of bonds and links with people. So lots of fun.
So what's the process that you go through when someone new starts with you? How do you make them feel at ease to continue working with you? And
so like adult groups, like you'd always, when they sort of start, the word sorry you hear so much, make them say sorry. and it's sort of like, you know, don't need to be sorry. And like, you just sort of help them explain. And especially with some of the people in the group who've been there longer, it's like, look, this person, when they started a year ago, was exactly the same as you. And then they sort of get to know like what we're sort of doing and everything else like that. Juniors is a little bit different. With the juniors, it's sort of more about, because they're used to doing lots of different clubs often, sort of doing it. So what you're sort of trying to do is sort of engage them and make them sort of really have a fun time. And often as well, like one of the key things I try to make sure is that we're learning as well, because you can make things, so kids are smarter than you realize. If you're just what I call them, like sugar lessons, you could just do just games, not really teach anything, just make it like fun.
Yeah.
But they get a little bit wise to the fact it's just fun.
Okay.
So it's creating like a fun environment in a learning environment. So like, so you're doing your games and they have to do a certain skill to do the game. So you're connecting sort of skill, fun, and other things like that. And a lot of things with our sort of juniors, we try and sort of develop the person as well. It's one of our key things we try to do. So we give praise around things like, rather than, oh, you're really talented or you've got a natural ability, which is often like the wrong thing to say to like kids, like we'll praise them on things that we want, what they can control. So like we often give praise on sort of really good listeners. So like, oh, you're a really good listener today. Now, if I got a group of 10 kids and I'm really praising this one person about who you're listening really well, and they're getting lots of praise, I've got 9 kids learning that people get praise for good listening.
Yeah.
So like you're sort of developing listening, you're developing the principles of like, you know, trying your best, working hard, things that you can control yourself, and then sort of feedback from that. And then obviously you're sort of building this sort of self-esteem and things like that around it as well.
That must work for adults as well.
yeah, it works probably a little less. and a little bit more ingrained in their habits as an adult.
It's harder to break them.
A little bit. But like what I've sort of found as well with how you engage with kids, it's not so much the words you say, it's the energy and how you deliver it.
Okay.
Whereas an adult, it's more about the words you say that's important. So we work with our assistants to try and help them understand it. So if he's with like a 6-year-old kid and he sort of hits a lovely shot and the assistant goes, "That is the best shot I've ever seen." Now, the words in itself, you can't have better praise than that in the words in itself. But for a kid, that's water off a duck's back. They don't really take it on. Whereas like if you say something with vigor and energy, it's the energy that you're giving out to kids that they respond to. So like with lots of energy, they then feel the energy that's onto them. So it's a lot more about, so you've got sort of the communication, the non-verbal sort of communication, so like the voice, the pitch, the energy, the loudness, going faster, slower, all these things, and your sort of body language and how you sort of live, like you're sort of bigger and creating things and it's sort of happening. That's what kids respond to, whereas sort of adults will respond a little bit less to those sort of approaches. They like that you'll give praise, but you give praise for a particular thing. So like a common sort of mistake of coaching is you're like, good shot, good shot, good shot. You're giving some feedback, like rather than good shot, good finish or good setup with the feet. So like, again, like you're learning about the process with the praise as well.
Yeah. So what do you think sets you apart from other tennis teachers, coaches?
I'd say possibly the ability to look at the big picture as an overall, and then the little details sort of coming into it as well. So you can step back and see a big picture and work out what's my sort of strategic moves that are going to put things in place, processes that are going to work, marketing campaigns, where am I targeting, things like that. And then go into the little details. So like understanding about how energy is important, understanding how language is important. Often sort of describe when I sort of work with other sort of coach and assistants is there's layers that happen in a tennis lesson. And most people aren't aware of like the layers that you're going through. So you'll have the structure of the court, the lesson. So what we're doing, how we're doing it. Then you've got the language that you're sort of using that's sort of happening. So you're subconsciously sort of priming them with language. The energy levels that you're using is sort of then sort of controlling it. And then like the time frames between different things and how long people can concentrate for and not concentrate for. So when you're doing it very well, it's very, very, very tiring because you're monitoring things on like quite a few different levels to get the right sort of process. And quite a lot of the time, the unsubtle levels, they don't pick up consciously, but they're picking up subconsciously. So they know they're sort of that vibe they're getting from the lesson, but they can't put their finger on it, or they're starting to behave better for you, but they might not know why.
Why?
and it's things like that that sort of make things work very well. It's the awareness to be able to see it, change it, adapt. You've got to be very aware of yourself as well and how you portray yourself. And it's their ability to sort of look in, look out, see how they are, what are my different responses. So the same thing was talking about, like the technique, often how I describe it is as a coach, you'll pick what you think's the individual thing that's gone wrong, or not gone wrong, but that could be improved. And then so like there's your point. Now you have your first way of trying to approach it. If that's not working, you approach from another way. And it's the same thing with people. So like if they've not got the energy or the enthusiasm for it, or you can see a kid where they're getting a little bit despondent and lower, and like, are you picking up on that? Are you then able to engage them and sort of like find out what's wrong? Sometimes it could be they've had a bad day at school, but then that's a chance to sort of build a connection with them that you're caring, because you're actually sort of making that effort to sort of see how they are. Sometimes it's just that if you put a bit more energy in, they'll respond as well. So like you see where they are. So that's almost like the problem, and it's understanding. And the longer you're with people, the more you start to understand them, and it's allowing that information to build up over time. So you're sort of building up sort of stronger sort of connections with people. And quite a lot of the time, especially a lot of the adult groups, they become sort of like your friends as well, which is sort of really nice. And you sort of happily spend time away from the tennis club. I had a lesson today that he's sort of a 19-year-old lad who's just at his first year at university. So like when I started 6 years ago, he was one of there was only about 30 people on the program when I started in the coaching. So he was one of the first ones. Mm-hmm. So he did it for 6 years all the way through with myself. And
Wow. I was just about to ask, what's your longest standing, like, years or months with a client? And you've just answered it, 6 years.
So he went to university. So far. We've got a brother and sister that started at the same time that also is still sort of going. I think they're in the year 12 or 13 now. But I think the girl started when she was 9, I believe, 8 or 9, when she started.
Yeah.
And she's sort of still going and still enjoying it and everything else like that.
That's, that must be really rewarding because you're seeing them grow up as well along the way and seeing them change.
I've gone through processes of helpers that help me whilst they're in sixth form, go to university, they come back, then they help me through like sort of holiday camps and things like that. I try to put just as much work into like the helpers to make the helpers better, because if I've got better helpers, they're giving better quality to the students who are paying for lessons, they're getting a better experience. So like having like good helpers makes a big difference to myself, because I really try to make sure like I've very good ratios in groups, so rather than sort of like packing them in like with like long lines and things like that, sort of good ratios, good structure, so that you're doing as much as possible like each lesson.
So what does your team structure look like? Like, who do you have in your team?
So I've got essentially, so we've got the club that I'm based at. So we have a, at the club, you have like a sort of committee and a chairman that I sort of work with the club. So essentially, like I have an agreement with the club in certain like hours that I can use courts, and there's other courts for like members. So we sort of work together on that. And then after that, we've got like sort of a second sort of full-time coach who's been there for 4 years now. And he's sort of he's doing very, very well, and he sort of works very hard. He does a lot of hours, but he loves it, and he's very happy at the club. then we did have another sort of part-time coach who stopped in March time, and sort of we're looking at sort of bringing in another sort of part-time coach when we sort of get back into. Obviously, we can't really do too much at the moment, so
that's sort of,
and then I've got like an adult who's like an assistant that helps with the adult groups as well. So like it just sort of, I used to take about 12 on a group for adults, which to be fair you could run just as yourself as a coach, but I find having an assistant sort of helping me with the adult groups, it just makes things work a little bit better. You can it all comes back to like what you feel is a good job, and I was like, having the an extra person there just makes it that the quality that little bit better. And then we've got like sort of a lot of sort of teenage assistants that sort of help on different groups, and we sort of try and sort of like help them sort of develop and become sort of better sort of helpers as well. So, yeah,
wow,
it's a good team we have.
It sounds like a very good team. Are you all quite close knit as well?
Yeah, so sort of work very closely with the other sort of full time coach. So sort of bounce ideas off each other and help each other out, which is very good. I think that all the sort of teenagers that will like help on the groups a lot, we often sort of pick teenagers that do a group already, and like it's a good sort of way of helping them sort of learn how to sort of help, and then the good thing is they see it from the flip side, from a coach's perspective to a student. So ones that possibly were slightly misbehaving in a group, when they start, when they're then trying to help and see a younger kid miss, they're like, that they start to sort of learn that. And also it makes them feel a little bit more connected, and they often sort of stay longer. Sometimes as you get older, you get like sort of a few more sort of dropping out. By sort of making them sort of more part of it, it sometimes often helps sort of keep them going for longer as well.
Yeah.
So it's a
good
experience for the kids as well, and sort of learning to be work with other people and have a bit of responsibility and everything else like that.
So working with kids, so my mom's a teacher, or was a teacher, and I think for me, with anyone working with kids, one of my most favorite things to find out is, what is the weirdest thing you've ever heard a kid say?
Probably not something I could say on a webinar, because they didn't realize what they said. It's quite rude.
Don't. I can put an explicit tag on it. It's okay.
It's, for some reason, the rude ones come to mind quicker than the bizarre things. top of my head,
They're all the best stories, eh?
There's nothing too bad, really. But I think like some things just sort of stick in your head a little bit more. I want no, that's rude as well. I probably can't say that one either.
Here I was thinking I was asking a perfectly innocent question.
It was perfectly innocent. It's just kind of unfortunately how I've remembered a few things. I suppose sort of kids say like funny things sort of here and there, sort of lots of like you kind of it just sort of breezes over you a little bit, and those situations doesn't quite sort of land on you so much as something you remember. I think the ones that actually made me laugh more was probably the ones that I've remembered a bit more.
So I realise we jumped straight in and I haven't actually asked you to introduce yourself because I can see you, I know who you are, but no one else will know unless they know you are Nick. So
So I'm Ben Wood, and I run a tennis club in Harpenden called Elliswick, which is in Hertfordshire. That's my role.
For anyone that wanted to reach out to you, how could they reach out to you?
Easiest way would be sort of check out our sort of club's website, which is sort of if you Google sort of Elliswick LTC, it'll sort of come up in Google, and then sort of got all the contact details and all the information on what's going on, or what's not going on at the moment, but information when we can start to sort of get back into it.
Okay. So now some random questions about you as opposed to the business.
Okay.
What is, and only say things you feel comfortable being aired. Because if it's funny, I will launch it. So you have been warned. What is one thing that you think would surprise other people about you?
Ooh. Surprise. I might not surprise as many people now, but I try to sort of meditate every day. So I do sort of...
How did you get into meditation?
I got into meditation. So I had some sort of personal sort of problems, which sort of led to sort of like counseling about 3-4 years ago. Essentially my second son was born with quite a few sort of complications. He was in and out of hospital a lot of operations, work was very sort of stressful. So there was a few things sort of going on there, and it just got a little bit sort of too much for myself at the time. Saw sort of a counselor, and they sort of recommended doing, I think the app was called Headspace.
I love Headspace.
So sort of got into it from there, and just always enjoyed sort of having that sort of, especially when I've got, I try to make time as much as possible. A little bit hard if I've got the kids with me, but
yeah.
Essentially it's just like sort of 10 minutes of just sort of switching off, connecting with yourself, and doing that. So
and has that helped a lot? Is it something you recommend to other people?
100%. I recommend it to sort of a lot of people. I think it's very good. I think it's almost, because it was perceived a little bit in the past, kind of like a little bit sort of Eastern culture and like kind of like hippie-ish in terms of what it was. But I think sort of now, obviously, like the science has caught up with the actual benefits of everything of meditation. So it shows the impacts it has on the brain, how the brain's plastic in terms of how it can change and adapts. And it sort of really helps sort of a lot of people sort of just get a little bit more grounded on especially when life and jobs are sort of stressful. It just gives you that, you've always got that ability to sort of go back to those sort of positions as you're doing things. So it's definitely something that's I recommend.
What's a benefit from meditation that you didn't expect?
Benefit from meditation. I suppose it's sort of that, just finding your sort of, sounds a little bit hippie now, but like your inner, in like how you are. So I did, there was a lot of things I was sort of struggling with in the past, but like getting to that point, I kind of like, because I wasn't very happy for quite a while, and like I always thought I wanted to be sort of like happy, but like when I sort of found out, like when you've got like peace with yourself, that was the foundation that you can then move up from. So I was kind of looking for this, but I didn't have my sort of foundation, so that sort of kind of like the biggest thing that sort of came through for myself.
Foundations. I like that. That's a pretty good answer. I'm impressed.
All right then.
If you could be any mythical creature, what would it be?
Poor mythical creature. I'd go for a dragon. You can fly around and travel the world.
Okay, travel the world. I like it. So what is your most favorite holiday?
Favorite holiday that I've done probably was I went to see a friend in America and sort of got sort of do sort of Universal sort of Studios and a few things like that. I did a skydive when I was there as well.
Nice.
So sort of just got, it's kind of like a time I need to sort of get away and get out, and it was kind of like the perfect holiday in that sort of sense. Kind of lots of places I want to go out and sort of travel to in the future, but that was at that time was spot on.
So tell us a story about going skydiving. How did it happen? Had you planned it beforehand or was it spur of the moment?
So I'd signed up for a sort of business life course, and it's called the Powerful Man, and sort of I'm sort of still on it now, and I sort of find it very, very helpful. And essentially, like within it, you've got like sort of five sort of categories. So you've got self, wealth, health, relationships, and business. And you've got like, what you have to do is like you have 3 months, you have to pick, like you have a goal that you have for the end of the 90 days. And for myself, I had to pick 20 things that scared me.
Oh God, okay.
The skydive was right up there as something that sort of scared me. So like when I was a lot more nervous the days leading up to it.
Yeah.
And on the day, I was a lot calmer on the day. The plane going up sort of I was reasonably good on the plane. And then, I remember the heart going when you're kind of like on the edge looking out going, it's a big drop, and then you're off. I absolutely love the fact I did it, and it was such an amazing experience doing it as well. So it was.
Would you do it again?
Probably.
So what were the other things on this top 20 list of things that scare the bejesus out of you?
It was like a heights one. So I jumped off the top of a diving board in like, and to be fair, when I was messing around, I smashed my tub, one of those little bouncy ones. I didn't do too well. So I had to jump in the top with like a bit of a not nice toe. Which I remember, there were some other ones, hold a snake. Essentially, like what the coaches sort of said was like, if it's a physical challenge, they like you will sort of take a deep breath and you will do it. They said like that doesn't, it intimidates you, but it doesn't scare you. You'll do it. What it actually was sort of difficult conversations was a thing sort of scared me more. So like speaking to sort of someone about something that you weren't happy with. And sort of like, because a lot of the times before, sort of like I'd sort of avoid sort of conflict, but that would be at my personal sort of detriment. So like having the confidence to sort of bring something up and say something that you're not happy with, because essentially what people do a lot of the time is they go into their head and think of what the worst case is going to happen when you have this conversation.
I'm guilty of that.
And what I learned from about sort of four or five different conversations with different people, you learned that it wasn't what you had in your head. And it possibly sort of had like, you're a bit heavy or something like that. It kind of freed you up and you just feel a lot more sort of clear. Your conscience was like clear and everything else. So it's, you know, that scared me more, but by doing it, you know, you can do it.
Yeah. So did you get through all 20 of your lists?
I think I got to 18 in the end. I was supposed to do a bungee jump, but I had to go to Bristol or something about 3 hours away to do it. I'll give that a mess.
So you fly all the way to the US.
Well, I didn't fly to the US.
Skydive.
One of the friends I was staying with was a skydive instructor, so like it was kind of
okay, fair enough.
In that sense.
Yeah, that's a pretty good excuse, actually.
It was good. It was good, and I got what I needed to get from doing 18. It showed that you can do things, and like if you to take a deep breath and go for it, and you also know the other side is better than what you thought it was going to be before. So
yeah,
definitely worth it.
So, what would be your advice to your boys when they turn 18? When it comes to life?
Well, I suppose a lot of the work you're trying to do already, because it's you know how your childhood affects your adulthood.
Yeah.
So like you're sort of trying to sort of put in good values, sort of kindness, generosity. You try and act how you kind of want them to act. So you've got to be aware of yourself a little bit in that sense. Make them feel very loved. It's sort of very important, and a few things like that. And then I guess when they get to sort of 18, advice would be, I suppose the advice would be go out and follow what you want to do. Go out and fail without fear, and sort of for them to know, like if it ever goes completely Pete Tong, they've always got like a safety net with their parent but they know they've tried. And it's better to try. Yeah. It's better to try young, and sort of go out and be bold. Than the more responsibilities that you have when you've got mortgages and other things like that, you can't take the risks so much. So
yeah, the harder it hurts as well when you fall down.
a little bit. So you've got to be a little bit more careful. So just get giving them the confidence to go out and try and know that they've still got, like, if they lost all their money, they've still got a bed to stay in. So it's never the end of the world.
And now we've got you on tape saying that. So when they, sure. If they ever get to that stage, they'll be like, well, hold on a second.
30 years old.
10 years ago.
Okay, now's the time. I want my house.
that's really good advice. Did you get that from your, like, do you feel... All of these values that you've got and what you're wanting to instill in your boys, do you feel that you learned that yourself, or is it the way that you were brought up as well?
A lot of it sort of brought up. From sort of self-reflecting and things like that, you find sort of things that are good about you, but you also sort of like when you're self-reflecting, you kind of find areas that maybe you could be better in. And it's then sort of like you can sort of think back and kind of like how these things sort of manifested and created like who you are. But the best thing that you've always got now is like choice. Nothing's set in stone. You've got choice in what you do, how you do it, and you take ultimate responsibility in your actions. Like you can't just sit and complain that, oh, it's gone wrong, it's not right. I mean, I say that like when it went into lockdown, like I spent like a good week feeling very much like that. I was like, this is ridiculous. Like I can't do my job. Like the summer is essentially for a tennis coach is your big period. So like you've lost summer. It's like, oh, this is so unfair. So I moped for about a week, and then I kind of sort of shifted sort of mindset. And actually in the end, I really enjoyed lockdown sort of doing, I was like planning ahead, like where can I make the club better? What things do I want to do for myself at the moment? Sort of like good sort of structures and sort of routines. And I really actually enjoyed lockdown by the...
I mean, bar the fact that it's a pandemic and unfortunately a lot of people have died, I think if you are someone that tends to look on the bright side, you've taken the opportunity to make the most out of the situation.
Yeah, that's
and I think
it was like the idea was to sort of thrive, not survive. Yeah. And like, and it's one of the things sort of teaching tennis a lot is control the controllables. You can't control when you go back on court. I don't have control over that, so you can't worry about that sort of so much. But what can I control? What can I put in place? Sort of go back to the course of, we've got like the self, wealth, health, like different things like that. So got my sort of like got my diet on point of what I was eating, trying to exercise, doing sort of meditation and yoga. So like you're working on yourself, trying to get out for like Your hours exercise, go out and start the walk in nature. So like sort of doing lots of things that essentially like to fill your own cup up for yourself. And then in the business, I sort of came up with sort of different initiatives and different ideas that I sort of believe will again keep us moving forwards and differentiating ourselves, because I've always wanted the club to, my sort of ethos of the club was national excellence club feel. So like what we delivered was very high class, what we delivered, but we maintained it within like a club feel, so the environment and the soul of the club was there.
Yeah.
But the delivery of everything we do is sort of very, very high, and sort of a few sort of initiatives that hopefully push out and sort of evolve and make it sort of keep moving back forwards.
Okay, last question. What is your favorite lesson to teach anyone that learns tennis with you?
So it wasn't an actual sort of moment of coaching. One of the girls I used to coach, watching her win a grade two. So in tennis, you've got grade one, which is essentially like this one or two sort of tournaments a year for a grade one. So it's like the national championships. Grade two, basically all the best players sort of doing the grade twos. Watching her sort of like win, and like because as a player, you've got a lot of enjoyment sort of playing and winning yourself. But then sort of like having like seeing someone that you work with sort of achieving and sort of doing very well. I gave the poor girl a hard time when she didn't do what she was supposed to be doing, but she played. We kind of had like a, she kind of knew what wants to sort of get done and do it, and like she sort of executed sort of very, very well, and sort of was like a very sort of proud moment in that sense.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me and letting me interview you for the podcast. It's been really nice getting to know you and asking questions.
Absolute pleasure. Absolute pleasure.
Was the interview with the lovely Ben Wood. I hope you all enjoyed it. As always, in the show notes, you can find links to all of the relevant pages. So you can find a link to his business, to some of the training courses he mentioned, and to Headspace. So take a chance to check those out. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review wherever you listen to episodes. Or if you listen to podcasts. I will be launching a Patreon page shortly as well. Or rather, it's up and running, but I'm not advertising it yet because I'm not entirely sure yet what to give you guys there. So if you've got any ideas of what you would like to see on a Patreon page, please let me know. If you would like to have your adventure showcased on the Wild Adventures podcast, then please drop me a note. You can write to me at marlene@thewanderingwildling.co.uk. There will be a link to my email as well in the show notes. Otherwise, have a fantastic weekend and happy Friday, everybody. Bye.